Hello, and thank you for listening to the World Dreamer podcast, where we take popular stories and settings and turn them into tabletop RPGs. My name is Matt, and today we'll be delving into the world of Percy Jackson. And here we are. As usual, before we get started, I have a couple guests on today. If both of you guys want to, you know, introduce yourself, just like say your name and your familiarity with the series, whoever wants to start can go.
Yeah, sure. My name's Mac. I go by they, he pronouns. I've read Percy Jackson's for a very long time, since I was in middle school. And I was just thinking about earlier, I read like the last book of the Heroes of Olympus series, like in eighth grade. I have such a clear memory of reading it.
Nice, nice. All right, and we got one more.
Hey, everyone. I'm Michael. I use he, him, his pronouns, and I am currently a theater studies and psychology major at Ithaca College. Not that really matters to this, but my familiarity with the subject matter is a love of Percy Jackson ever since. I remember it was the type of book that I saw advertised in a lot of the kids' magazines I got, and I always wondered what it was. And then when I actually started reading it, it was the, oh my, like, this is
the only book ever.
Right? It's like, and it's able to capture so many things about the experience of coming of age and having like these great expectations and great powers and great responsibilities.
Hee hee.
Different series for that. But the way that it melds the adolescent experience and also this ancient mythology has such a way of, I don't know, it really, really reached me. And I followed it through. I'm still getting through Trials of Apollo, but I finished Magnus Chase most recently, and I love him.
I haven't even read that.
Oh, it's Annabeth's cousin, and it's Norse mythology. It's incredible.
Yeah. I guess I'm realizing I never actually, I guess, said my pronouns in the last episode. So I guess for those wondering, hi, I'm Matt, he, him, his pronouns. And yeah, I want to say I probably started Percy Jackson around the same time, like middle school-ish. Was kind of the right age for it, and was reading it, and like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I've read all Percy Jackson Olympians, read all of Heroes of Olympus, read all the Kane Chronicles. I have admittedly only read the first Magnus Chase, but I remember liking it quite a bit. I think I own the first Trials of Apollo, but I'm not sure I've ever actually read it. I should probably get around to doing that, but you know, who reads nowadays, really?
Zoinks.
No one. Can I ask, do you guys prefer, like, the Heroes of Olympus series or the Percy Jackson series?
Ooh. I mean, I will always hold the greatest nostalgia for the original. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll probably always gravitate towards that. But there's a lot of good stuff in Heroes of Olympus. Yeah. I think the new characters they sort of added were very nice.
I was very much obsessed with the Heroes of Olympus.
And you also got a lot more perspective on, because I think a big critique I have of a lot of YA novels general now looking back is that all their protagonists are just kind of no one. They're just like, I'm generic hero good man type. But like,
yeah.
Percy is a very defined, like, very sort of like surfer bro.
Right.
Kind of dude.
Has flaws.
And I think Heroes of Olympus provides some nice perspective on people looking at that. Like, Leo, the son of Hephaestus, like, goes to see Calypso.
Right.
And learns about, like, sort of Percy leaving there and gets, like, mad at him. And then Leo meets up with Percy again. And Percy's just such, like, a genuine, just kind of, like, chill dude, right, that Leo's like, God damn it, I can't stay mad at this guy.
Damn. I really want to reread the series now.
Yeah. Honestly, we should.
It's worth the time, yeah.
I think, well, we've all kind of answered this question a little bit, but I'll ask it nonetheless. What do we love about this world? Why does this world need its own thing sort of outside D&D? I guess, in short, why are we doing this episode?
Well, I think that there's something about, it's like we were discussing earlier that I think Mac put their finger on in regards to, like, there is such an understanding we get about each character, not only through their own personification, like when they are the first person narrator, which is wonderfully voiced by Rick Riordan, now living in Boston, very exciting, but also, yeah, the sense that the way these characters engage with each other and interact with each other informs each character. And the way they challenge their environments and the situations they're put up against, it feels like something that that is much deeper than simple, like Matt mentioned, character archetypes, like Hero Goodman. No, they're making decisions because they are fully realized characters who affect and have been affected by each other. And that just comes through so powerfully.
Yeah. I think that's really true, because D&D has such a way of, like, being able to go into each character's arcs and, like, you know, their flaws and how they interact with other characters that I think is really reflected in Percy Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess let's start diving into some ideas about sort of how to implement it into an RPG format. And the first thing I kind of want to throw out is, if you're going to do a Percy Jackson RPG, you're going to want to play as a demigod of a variety of the different gods. So I figure might as well start with that.
Right.
How would we implement sort of having this sort of like divine bloodline for sort of character creation?
Well, I think it's kind of simple. Like, you have a god, and that would be like a class, sort of. Like, being a son or daughter of each god would give you different powers, different access to different, like, weaponry proficiencies, you know, stuff like that.
And Matt, when you first mentioned this setting, the two games I thought of instantly were Masks, and I thought of a game called Aegon.
If you wouldn't mind, describe them a little bit for the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mac had the great point of there's a way that the traits of each god, each godly bloodline, translates so effectively to character archetypes. In games like Masks, which uses the Powered by the Apocalypse system, it doesn't focus too rigidly on the nitty-gritty of mechanics. And instead, the focus is all about, like, you might choose an archetype. Like, Masks specifically is meant to capture, like, teen titans, like young superheroes and stuff like that. And each archetype has different general abilities you have and different modifiers to, I believe there are 4 attributes, right?
Something in that range.
Somewhere within that range. But then the great thing about Masks is everything's based off of a roll of 2d6 based on one of the few attributes. And instead of the nitty-gritty of how am I influencing my dice rolls and making my stats the best they can be, it is focused around the relationships of the character. So if you fail something, you can choose to lash out at someone and face less of a penalty for yourself, but lashing out at someone ties in later. You can call upon your relationships with someone to get a bonus to a roll or something like that. You can owe each other favors. It really fleshes out the dynamic between the characters in a way where the things you do with each other have mechanical impact in such a way, and it keeps it light so that the impact of those things can be maximized. And then Aegon, John Harper is a brilliant game designer, also designed Blades in the Dark. Aegon reminds me of the godly bit because Aegon is centered around you're a party of heroes traveling from island to island in a place of Greek mythos. And when you confront challenges, you roll a dice pool that's based on all these different factors. So for example, you have your name die, which is bigger depending on the size of your title and the things you've accomplished. You have your godly die, which is related to strengthened by your relationship with your deific patron. You have stuff like that, and you roll up the dice pools and tally them up, and it's competitive against the encounters the DM has set out, absolutely, but also against each other in a sense, because you want to be the character not only that wins it for the party, but if you get the highest roll, you get the most glory, and that has impact with your favor with the gods and other things moving forwards.
Yeah, I could see those sort of systems implementing very well, but there was something I wanted to add to sort of the idea of creating like godly bloodlines as sort of an alternative for class, because mm-hmm. I think you can have sort of like basic, just sort of like general structure set lines for sort of like the big 12 gods as sort of defined within Percy Jackson, and also probably Hestia and Hades, because let's be honest, like someone's gonna want to play as a child of Hades.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like it's the archetypical edgy god. How you not gonna wanna?
I think you can't have that, you know, rule about, oh, no, none of the big 3 gods, you know, like,
right.
Let people play as the son of whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. But A mechanic I wanted to implement is something similar to a character creation mechanic in Stars Without Number.
Mm.
Stars Without Number, for those who don't know, is a very sci-fi heavy sort of themed RPG.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's very good.
Kevin Crawford.
But there's a mechanic in it where, you know, if you want to play as sort of an alien character, there's a few, like, basic structure things, and then you have this whole variety of, like, here are a bunch of different options for how to create your sort of alien race. Pick a few and sort of flavor them into however you want. And I think you could sort of have a setting for sort of thing for that in a Percy Jackson thing where you have this sort of just like vast variety of powers that you could flavor into sort of whatever minor god you wanted. And you could have some like basic structures for some of the bigger gods, but like I think a system would benefit from having like a big like, mm-hmm. here are a bunch of different options, flavor them into whatever god, goddess, whatever you want.
Yeah, for all those minor gods that never got much screen time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the plot of the first sort of arc of Percy Jackson is the fact that the big 12 gods keep shitting on all these these other ones.
The thing that I love about systems like Stars Without Number that I think Kevin Crawford has implemented so well in his systems is when you are making things like that, when you have this plethora of customization options, he literally says, he doesn't say pick two of these exactly, pick exactly three, pick like this and this and this. He says like, you'll have about one or two of these, maybe more if some of them are on the weaker side, use your best judgment. And that's so great when you have a system that can support that for creating characters, especially when it's demigods, and who knows the abilities that you might have access to. It's like, use your best judgment. Make a character that seems cool with the options we have.
Yeah. And I think part of that will also be sort of having a conversation between player and DM.
Right.
Because ultimately, it'll be part of the DM to say, like, hey, I think there should be certain limits imposed here and here.
Mm-hmm.
Or for the DM to say, nah, I think you can have more if you want. But yeah, also something I wanted to throw out with character creation, because like even within sort of like set sort of designs for like a bigger god like Zeus or Poseidon or Athena or something like that, there are a lot of different ways you could kind of flavor like, say with Poseidon having control over water or with like Demeter having control over plants. So I don't know how much this would sort of, you know, bog down and provide with almost like, I don't want to say too many options, but just sort of a lot of like overwhelming choice. Do you think it would be better to have like almost kind of multiple paths you can go down for like each sort of preset god? Or do you think it would make sense to have sort of like a, here's some abilities you can get from being related to this god, and also maybe just like an even like smaller class thing where it's like, here's some abilities you can have if you want to play like a tankier character or a more DPS or ranged or magic or support, something like that.
I think definitely that would be interesting because I think even in the book, like Talia and what's his face, Jason?
Jason.
They had different powers, but they had the same father. So I think it'd be interesting if you had like different paths or archetypes, even with the same god.
Okay, so have sort of like multiple like paths you can take for leveling up for each like deity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it comes back to masks for me, because with masks, it's, again, how do you emulate like these superpowered individuals? How do you quantify exactly how many d8s of damage your energy blast does? It's like, it will, when you pick your archetype, it lists different powers that might be in your domain, and it says pick two, and those powers might just simply say lightning manipulation, energy blasts, supersonic flight, stuff like that. And it's just like, it is what it is. And how you set about applying those to, well, if I use water manipulation, I can make a wall of water and be a frontliner if I want. It leaves it open to be molded by your expectations for what you want to do and the challenges you're facing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we've been touching a lot upon combat, because ultimately, you know, you're getting a set of powers as a demigod, you're going to want to throw them at stuff. Mike, you touched upon combat being similar to sort of a fusion of masks and Aegon, but for either Mike or Mac, is there anything specific you think, like, sort of a setting with Percy Jackson kind of, like, demands as far as combat goes?
I think maybe setting has a lot to do with it, I think. Like, in the books, they always are like, oh, flipping off walls and shit like that. So right. I think that might be more for this series, it might be more important to have settings or maps or something like that.
That's fair. That's fair. Like an idea of where you're going.
And I think even location, like in the books, has a lot to do with, like, has a great effect on, like, the way the battle goes and, like, who's more powerful and such.
Yeah, yeah. Terrain does have a big, because, you know, Percy's going to be more powerful if he's near the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you bring up the great point of, like, there are so many factors at play when the heroes in a Rick Riordan book face off against their, like, part of what I'd want to emulate is it's hardly, I think something would be lost if combat came down to basically roll-offs between groups of enemies, where you have encounters like, who was in the Heroes of Olympus, the gunslinger on top of the cliffs they met?
Oh, the thief guy who made you, like, massage his feet and then, like, kicked you off the cliff?
Yeah, where it's like, if I move, he will shoot me in the face. Like, I can't just roll a die at him. Or their fight with Medusa. It's not like, oh, I have to make a saving throw. It's like, if I look at her eyes, she will turn me to stone. And how do I get around that? And what factors in my environment do I need to use in order to take advantage of that?
Yeah. There are a lot of fights in Percy Jackson that I think are very dependent on not so much clashing with your opponent in terms of, like, strength v. strength, although it certainly, like, gets to that at points. Like, there's a lot of that in The Last Olympian, the final book of the Percy Jackson, the Olympian series.
Right.
But a lot of them have to do more so with deducing an enemy's weakness. So I think combat should more so emphasize, like, finding a specific weakness of your opponent. Like, it's more so combat is an experimentation until you find a solution, as opposed to we're going to stand here and hit each other until one of us drops.
Yeah, exactly, because especially when you're going up against, like you can fight gods in this. Like, literally, the first book, I think, Percy fights Ares.
And pretty much gets his ass kicked through most of it, but finds a way to sort of win around it.
And that's the point, is combat would probably be more like a puzzle than just, you know, blasting it to death.
Yeah. And something else I wanted to kind of throw out there, and this is a bit of a weird thing, but I think it is sort of essential to Percy Jackson, is I think the materials of weapons, I think, is something that is important. Because, like, there are a lot of different materials that people have that are very important for specific fights. Like, you know, you've got celestial bronze, which can hurt monsters and gods, but not, like, mortals. And then you've got stuff like Nico's Stygian iron sword that, like, works very well against things that are dead. And then you've got Backbiter, Luke's sword, which can cut through both monsters and humans, because it's sort of that half and half. And then you've got, I forget if Imperial Gold has a specific thing that, like, separates it from Celestial Bronze, or if it was kind of just their version. Because I remember them making, like, an offhanded comment about, like, the first fight in Heroes of Olympus when they fight those, like, wind spirits.
Yeah.
Where they hurt them with the Imperial Gold. And I think someone makes, like, a comment about, like, even Celestial Bronze would struggle to keep up with those. But I don't know if they ever specify how it's fully different. But I think you should still put Imperial Gold in there because, you know, it's cool.
Flavor.
But I think, like, you could sell, like, essentially the same weapon but of different materials.
Right.
And players can sort of, like, focus their arsenal on a specific material where it's like, I will be able to take more advantage in a specific type of fight and maybe play more support in fights where other players have more of an advantage.
Proficiency with a certain metal or, you know, enchantment.
Yeah, because, you know, with, like, Hades, maybe you could have, like, a better leaning towards Stygian iron, or if you were playing, like, a Roman god as opposed to a Greek one, you'd have more of a leaning with, you know, Imperial gold.
I wonder how it would be different if you were playing a child of a Roman god instead of a Greek one.
I mean, they portray the Roman gods, because, like, part of Heroes of Olympus is sort of that the gods are having this weird split personality thing.
Yeah.
And, like, I think the thing that I remember most is sort of the split with Ares and Mars. Because when Frank is, like, communing with Ares, he's splitting between these two phases of Ares, who is this, like, psychotic, like, violence-obsessed biker man. This very sort of, like, unrefined, I just want to punch whatever's in front of me type.
Yes.
And then Mars, who is this strict, disciplined military man. And I think it's less so about, I think the mechanical differences would be very slight, but I think the sort of like flavor differences of like who they are mm-hmm. can like reflect a bit more in if you're playing a Roman god versus a Greek god. Mm-hmm. And there are some Roman gods that don't actually have Greek counterparts that I think show up in the series, because like Janus is like a fully Roman god, and then Orcus is too, although I think most people know Orcus now because D&D.
Orcus.
Yeah, no, there is a guy who is a son of Orcus who shows up in the last book of Heroes of Olympus. He fights Nico.
That's wild. I forgot about that.
And Nico just, like, murders him.
Yeah, like, it feels like the type of thing that'd be slight for the most part, but something that should impact how people go about playing their characters. And I think of in terms of... If we were to look at the masks example, that would be the type of thing where it's like, as a Greek, you have the ability that's like once a session, when you strike out on your own, when you go it alone, when you use some spark of individual ingenuity, get +1 forward is the notation. And with a Roman character, that might be when you tap into your leadership abilities, when you solve a problem with your team, when you overcome a challenge with teamwork, gain one forward or something like that.
Yeah, I think there should absolutely be, like, even outside of flavors, just a couple mechanical differences to more so reflect even more so the flavor distances. Because D&D can be very easily made more so, like, roleplay and, like, interaction-based, but it isn't always the best mechanically supported.
Right.
So I think there should be an emphasis on sort of your interactions within yourselves, and also, like, with your enemies, because there are enemies that they, like, sort of talk to during the fights that, like, definitely change how the fights go and even talk down.
Mm-hmm. Matt, I'm curious, did you in the last episode address why this podcast seeks to look into systems and mechanics other than what might be available in D&D?
I guess I didn't fully address that, but I can talk about that here. Yeah, I wanted to do that just because, well, you know, D&D is probably the most popular tabletop RPG of all time, and that's all well and good. It's a very good system, but, you know, there are definitely weaknesses. It doesn't always address, you know, more charisma or interaction-based things. Combat is notoriously slow, and I think that it doesn't always work for sort of adapting other pre-existing worlds. Because, like, if I'm being honest, I really started this just because I love sort of envisioning interacting within these worlds and wanted to make good ways of doing that. But D&D isn't always the best way of doing that. Like, in the last episode, we talked about Hollow Knight, and Hollow Knight should be something more streamed and fast, and D&D is not always that.
Yeah, it comes back to, like, people talk about... Whenever I have the conversation trying to convert people from D&D to trying something else, they always come back to, well, I can do that through D&D. And it's like, yes, you can absolutely roleplay in D&D and play out social encounters, but the bulk of the mechanics support is combat, and it is built around the expectation that you will slay things and get experience from them. And yes, it is a chassis where you can, if you have a group that wants to do an intrigue campaign, sure, do it. Nothing's stopping you. But there is a world of games out there that people don't realize that attune the mechanics to what you actually want to do with individual settings. There are games where not only can you roleplay and have social roleplay, but there are mechanics for that that emphasize that and that make your choices for those sorts of encounters feel more meaningful and feel more purposeful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Plus, you know, it's also good to support smaller creators.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
Wizards of the Coast have plenty of money. You can maybe send some support towards some people who don't have as much.
Fuck Wizards of the Coast. All my homies hate Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah. But, you know, this isn't about our thoughts on Wizards of the Coast, whatever those may be. It's about this. And I certainly think there are some sort of Dungeons & Dragons-esque mechanics that can be translated over to a Percy Jackson-esque thing. Like, you can do leveling up not so much in the sense of, like, the experience sort of progression, but just sort of the mechanics of how D&D does leveling up, where you have just sort of, like, different perks from specific sort of areas of your character that you can advance at a certain time. Like, I think sort of how you go about leveling up can be similar. I think, honestly, I think Percy Jackson combat still could work well with sort of a D20 and then damage system. I think it's sort of the thought and structure behind setting up encounters that should be different.
Right.
Is there anything else that you guys specifically want to add to a Percy Jackson world that you think we haven't addressed?
I have one more thing. I think back to how the stories are told in Percy Jackson, and it is friends swapping stories about the gods next to the campfire, or in the quiet moments between their quests on the road, or something like that, or around a feast table, for that matter. And I think the more that the game, whatever game comes from this, can attune itself to those sensations. We are sitting around a campfire, we are swapping these stories, we're telling these tales together, the more successful it's going to be. Capturing the heart of not just what is the story about, but how is the story told that will drive our journeys. And that's all from me.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a really insightful addition to sort of how the story is told and how you can tell similar stories. Mac, did you want to add anything else, or are you all set?
No, I agree with Michael. I think, like, the way people play D&D with the whole quest and arcs really lends itself to Percy Jackson.
Yeah, well, thank you both so much for joining me here. Mike, I'm aware you have another podcast if you want to take some time to plug that here.
Oh, absolutely. You will, not now, but soon, be hearing from a new actual play podcast called The Dice Made Me Do It, where we jump into the newest game from the creator of Stars Without Number, which we mentioned earlier, Kevin Crawford, in a narrative Worlds Without Number campaign. And it's very exciting. It is the principles of some of the original Dungeons & Dragons sandbox with very sleek modern mechanics. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant designer, and it's really exciting to be able to broadcast a game of his system. So thank you, Matt.
Yeah, no problem. Mac, you have anything you want to plug?
Not really. As you can tell, this is my first time being on a podcast, so.
Hey, that's fine. I am confident it won't be your last.
Aw. Is that a compliment?
I say that also because, you know, I need guests, and you're pretty smart. So, like, please continue to join me. All right. Again, thank you so much for joining me, and I think we made something good here. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you enjoyed it, please continue following us on the platform of your choice and recommend the show to people you know. In addition, consider following us on Instagram at the.world.dreamer. This has been Matt, and I hope you have a good day.